Imagine yourself under a starry sky, around the warm glow of the sacred fire, as your hosts, Seren Odinson, Jim Two Snakes, and Caitlin Stormbreaker, talk about shamanism, animism, books, science, psychology, pop culture, and more. Welcome to a show inspired by those late-night conversations by real-life spiritual practitioners. Won't you come and join us around Grandfather Fire?
Your ancestors survive floods and famines, and ice ages too. They survive plagues and poxes, even the Spanish flu. They survive mad kings, raiders and pirates, World War I and II. And by staying calm and working together, we will survive too. So be a good ancestor. The future needs you. Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Around Grandfather Fire. You're listening to episode number 42. I am Jim Two Snakes, joined, as always, by my good friends and co-hosts, Seren Odinson and Caitlin Stormbreaker. How are you two doing tonight?
I have the flu.
Yay!
Oh, no.
Again, for the second time this year. You know what? I'll take it. I'll take two flus in one year over
It is a lot better than the alternative, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. That was kind of the genesis of that poem this morning. I was on the way to work this morning, and I was just kind of thinking thoughts in my head and strung it together. And like I said, I heard it in like a Mr. Rogers almost type voice, but I was, I, you know, put it up on our Discord, and everybody's like, oh, no, it's not silly at all. All right, I'll put it on my Jim Two Snakes page. And I did that, and all of a sudden it's getting shared all over the place. I'm like, how about that?
Weird.
Wow. A little lighthearted positivity goes a long way sometimes.
Weird.
Oh, well.
Right.
How are you coping with all this, Seren? I know you have been, the face goes into the palm. Yep,
Jesus. So, I'm in one of those work categories where at risk is a constant. So, you know, and we've privately talked about this, but for the listeners who don't know, like working at a max security or close enough to max security mental health facility, you know, one of the things you're always on the watch for is whenever anything infectious goes around, you're constantly like, all right, you know, not just wash your hands, but like our family is full on decontamination procedures. You know, every time I
put
walk
the work clothes in the baskets and go immediately to the decontamination shower.
Mm-hmm. No, I mean that honestly, that really is it. You know, when you're talking about this, you know, and all the other stuff that's been passed around work between two different strains of flu, coronavirus, everything else. It's like, guys, this is nothing to play with. So,
isn't it weird though? I mean, I keep thinking about the fact that, you know, like I make notes in my journal and I'm like struck because I remember taking history classes in school and you see snippets of like soldiers' journals or civilians' journals. And I'm like, this is so weird that I'm writing something now. We're living in such a weird and unique time that you know, those journals are going to be the same way. It's, I don't know. It's just kind of crazy. It's hard to imagine.
It really is. Cause I mean, it's one thing to read historical journals and go, wow, this is history. And it's another thing to look at your journal and go, huh? History.
Yeah. You know, that actually thinking of journaling in that manner, I read an account from a historian that says, we love those teenage girl journals that are like, I had an egg for breakfast with some wheat toast and an avocado and all this, like going into extreme detail about all the stuff they ate, because historians are like, yes, we finally have a solid basis of what their diet was like during this time. And I look at my journal as like, okay, well, this could become a historic document at some point. So let's talk about all this shit that's going on in the world right now.
this, this guy liked Red Bull way too much. I don't know.
Red Bull. I wonder if that had a ritual significance of something.
That's right. It probably had some. There was in the ancient texts references to Red Bulls giving you wings. I think that was a call to an ancient bull god that they prayed to for prosperity and power.
Oh, man.
Oh, no, they're not wrong.
I mean.
Oh, man. That's fantastic. Well, everybody, I'd like to welcome our guest tonight. I've been looking forward to this all week. We're having a friend in from out on the West Coast, but not even a native originally of the United States. So we get a fantastic, more of a worldly view on tonight's show. A shaman, an author, a Reiki practitioner, and we'd like to welcome Frank Cupetiers. Was that close enough? Did I slaughter it too bad?
No, it was okay. Cupetiers.
All right. I have to admit, there's a standing rule on the show that I get to slaughter the pronunciation of something every show. So now that we've got that out of the way. So I appreciate that.
We're still friends, Jim.
I appreciate that. Well, thank you so much for joining us tonight. Really appreciate it.
It's an honor. It's an honor.
So tell our listeners a little bit about yourself.
Well, as you can hear from my name, it's a foreign-sounding name. I come from the Flemish or the Dutch-speaking part of Belgium, where I was born in 1950. And I immigrated to the U.S. in 85. And the first time I came to the U.S., it was in Michigan, Ann Arbor, Michigan.
Oh, really?
Yes, that's right. That's right. I didn't put that together until just now. It was a conference on semiotics, the meaning of signs. And I must say that it was a 10-day conference. And I was a bit in an altered state, mostly, I think, because of jet lag. But I had that peculiar feeling that this is the place I was supposed to be at. Apparently, as a kid, I told my mom several times I was not going to stay in Belgium. Mm-hmm. Which she didn't repeat to me until she was in her 70s. But truly, yes, it was a strange feeling I had in those days that I knew the land, I knew the people knew me. And so ever after that, I did numerous attempts to come to the U.S. and was successful and then eventually immigrated.
That's amazing. That's amazing. So how did you get started on your shamanic path?
Well, I think the earliest beginning of that was a near-death experience shortly after I was four. And my older brother, just last week, sent me the notes from the hospital where I was at. He found my parents had passed a few years ago. And so he was going through the archives. And he found that I was in that hospital for 2 weeks. And the diagnosis is not totally clear. It says gastro something. It's a little bit illegible. But I do remember that in that period of time, I was in touch with dimensions beyond this regular reality. And when I came out of it, I was just a little different. Mm-hmm. I think I had seen something that the grown-ups had not seen and also the young ones my age hadn't seen. And I didn't really talk about it ever, except to my parents and my brothers. But later, much later, I realized that probably that was an initiation of sorts. I have a distinct memory that one of my grandmothers was praying. She was a devotee of Mary. You know, Belgium was a very Catholic country at the time.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so she was praying. And I do remember that my parents were emotionally very distraught. And I could feel their love and their concern. But I could also feel that what my grandmother was doing was actually useful, more useful than the emotions that were going on. And I developed a close bond with her. But I think the most important thing about that whole thing was that something in me knew for a fact that I was going to stay on Earth for a long time, and that I was a little bit confused that the grown-ups did not know that. yes. And so it's kind of funny to think about it, you know, because that's of course now 60 years ago. But I think that was the beginning in a way. Mm-hmm. And then the next big step was when I started to meditate at the age of 21, 22, that world started coming back on a regular basis. Mm-hmm. And then the most important thing was meeting a phenomenal shaman from Hungary. I'm sure you haven't heard his name, but you can find him on the internet. His name is Joska Sos, and I met him in my late 20s, and that was an immediate strong rapport when he did a demonstration where I was at. It was so familiar in a way. It was very foreign also, but also so familiar. And I knew I wanted to study with him, and that happened, and that became a long apprenticeship till he died about 12 years ago. So that was the beginning, I would say, of my shamanic journey, was the near-death experience, the meditation part, reading a lot of books, and then meeting a great teacher in the flesh, whom I visited really for many years weekly. And so being with him under his supervision was amazing, just amazing.
What was that experience like for you, learning from somebody so far outside of like your cultural understanding of the world?
Yes, that was very remarkable, because I didn't know anybody. So at the time I was working in academia, in a graduate program. And, you know, a lot of my colleagues were very knowledgeable, and some were actually quite well known in Belgium. But he was the only person that I knew had a very solid presence. Like, I could see and feel that he was planted, you know, with his whole body on the earth. And at the same time, he would travel in these dimensions that I suspected existed, but that I certainly didn't have a regular contact with, not in the way. For him, it was like he lived there, and he could easily go back and forth, but his real home was in the other dimensions. And so that was absolutely fascinating, you know, to me. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I felt that he had real knowledge, and that I had book knowledge, you know, some experiences for sure, but nothing that was necessarily helpful to live in the life that I wanted to live, you know, a life of presence. And also he was very loving, very compassionate. It's like he knew if I had questions. I think he knew probably before I did which those questions were. And that was a kind of an interesting thing to experience, you know, on a regular basis.
Mm. How would you describe the tradition or techniques that you learned? Are they actually like a Hungarian technique, or tell us a bit about that?
Yes and no. I mean, okay. He was certainly strongly steeped in his tradition, because he was one of those young boys that was trained from the age of 5 or 6 by the local shaman. And he was born, I don't know if you've heard that expression, he was born with the cow, which means that at birth, you know, the placenta is surrounding, in his case, it was surrounding his whole body, which is quite unusual. And so he, on occasion, he would mention that, because people who are born like that, they have extrasensory perception. Mm-hmm. Some of it is just technical. You know, at birth, there is a constant oxygen stream that keeps going. Whereas in a regular birth, there's a short interruption, but still, you know, millions of brain cells die. And so native cultures were aware of that. So that was one of the reasons that he was trained by the local shaman. And also he came from a clan. In Hungary, there were a lot of different clans. And so he was born into the shaman clan. Mm. So that was certainly Hungarian in a way. But when he came, do you want to hear a little bit about his life, maybe?
Yes, sure. Please.
Yeah, you would? Yeah. So in the when he was 20, he was put in labor camp by the Germans. And, you know, he saw many of his colleagues pass away there. It was, I think, quite a frightening and maybe traumatic episode. But people had the feeling, and he also did, actually, that being around him was some sort of a protection. Hmm. But so after the war, he didn't want to go back to Hungary because, you know, it was a totalitarian regime at the time. Communism, not very good for artists and certainly not for shamans. So he decided to look for work first in the Netherlands, where he couldn't find any work. And then in Belgium, the Belgian people no longer wanted to work in the coal mines. So at that time, after the Second World War, they had a special regimen that if you signed up for 5 years to work in the coal mines, then you could apply for citizenship. So that's what he did. And strange, I mean, he did get stuff in his lungs, you know, which he suffered from. But what happened when he was in those coal mines at lunchtime, he would not go back up like his colleagues to daylight. He would stay in the pitch darkness of the belly of the earth, you know. Mm-hmm. And his vision started to open up more and more. So he could, at some point, perceive light beings. Mm-hmm. He could hear sounds, you know. So in a certain kind of a strange way, it was the perfect place for him to be. And then it took quite a while, actually, because he was also going to art school. And so he started to exhibit his art, which is very visionary. I have a lot of it around me. I started collecting it. But it wasn't until his late 50s that he felt he should really start sharing his shamanic talents with people. Mm-hmm. So I met him when he was in his early 60s, I believe. And he was in full force, you know. Mm-hmm. And he remained working actually till the tail end. In his early 80s, he was still seeing 4 people a day doing full-blown shamanic. He was a strong, maybe the shamanic time in the coal mines, you know, had made him very strong also. But he was a force of nature. And one very interesting thing about his life, I think, is that when he was 10 years old, his parents were a bit concerned about him. I think today they would have called him an ADHD kid, you know. Mm-hmm. But so that term didn't exist then. But he was psychoanalyzed by the one Hungarian psychoanalyst in the circle of Carl Jung. His name is Ferenczi. He's actually quite well known in the literature of psychoanalysis. So Ferenczi took about a week to do his studies, and he wrote a report that my teacher was very proud of, you know. And the gist of it was, this is a very special boy. He should be given a lot of space to roam in. Don't put him in a strict regimen. That would not be good for him. Hmm. And so on his desk in his workspace, he had a little statue of Ferenczi. But at the time, I didn't know who Ferenczi was, you know. But he got protected there. And so he always had a very keen interest in everything that Jung wrote about. And also in general, he had his library was filled with the most interesting books that I have ever seen. Hmm. Yeah. And maybe one more thing. He connected with a group of Tibetan lamas in London in the 70s. And they recognized him as a sound keeper. And at some point, they started giving him a lot of sacred objects. And he had to vow that he was not going to sell them for a high price, but only to people who would work with them. Mm-hmm. And of course, I became one of those. But it was one of those things. Joschka's house was filled with very, very strong objects. Really wow. Fantastic. Yeah.
Wow.
Amazing. Yeah.
Sounds like a man after my own heart.
Yeah. Yes. 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 Yeah.
I think what's there's a couple things that are really inspiring there, but I think the one that I really can relate to, and we've talked about before, is the whole aspect of, you know, working in the coal mine, but you take your break down there, because we've talked on this show about how, you know, most of us are doing jobs that we're doing just because we need the money, we have to survive, we've got to get by, and it's how can you fit your shamanic path into your life and make it a complete picture, as opposed to, you know, fighting against it or beating yourself up that you're not living this perfect life out in the wilderness or whatever. So that part really inspires me a lot.
Yes, that's so true, you know, because at that time, so I'm talking about the late 70s, early 80s, he called himself an urban shaman. And that was quite new at the time. And he said, well, you know, I have to live where the people live. Mm-hmm. And the people so he was living first in Brussels, you know, the capital of Belgium, and then later mm-hmm. in Antwerp, the big harbor in Belgium. He said, people in the cities, they are going crazy. More and more, they're in disharmony. And he felt it was his job, not necessarily so much to heal people, but to bring them back into harmony. That mm-hmm. was like his life's mission, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
So living in Portland, I know, is a relatively large city. How do you balance that, you know, because as a shaman, I have a very deep connection with the woods. I grew up out in the country. I love cornfields. I love real thick woods and stuff like that. And so how does living in a bigger city translate to like a wilderness? Do you have to go out to the woods? Because I know Oregon is very wooded, but Portland is also very much city. So how does that work for you in your practice?
Yes, that's correct. And so, of course, you know, coming from Belgium, you may not realize that Belgium fits 9 times into Oregon.
No, you know, actually, I don't yes. think I've written that term.
Yeah, usually, yeah. Many people know. Belgium is one of the most densely populated countries in the world, you know. And there's 11 million there. Oregon has like 4 million. So for me, coming to Oregon and discovering all the green space here, you know, was just mm-hmm. phenomenal. And when I have visitors from Belgium, they can, you know. But I'm lucky. I live at the outskirts of Portland. Mm-hmm. And Portland has actually a lot of parks. So just where my house is, we have 3 parks very close. But for the wilderness, yes. For the wilderness, you have to at least drive about an hour. And there is a lot of wilderness in Oregon. So we have mountains here. Mm-hmm. We have the sea. And we have the wilderness. And one of the places that I teach at is a place where the native people used to come together in council, and they wouldn't take up arms, and they would sit in council until whatever issues there were to be resolved were resolved. And when I go, and they have hot springs there, mineral hot springs, mm-hmm. and I must say, and they are off the, there is a community living there that is off the grid. And even though Portland is a very, I would say, healthy city as far as cities go. Mm-hmm. When I'm in Brighton Bush Hot Springs, immediately, within a minute or so, my whole system relaxes. And even if I it's really true. It never fails. And even if I stay for only 2 or 3 days, I'm being tuned up there. So I'm very, very, the first time I went to Brighton Bush Hot Springs, which is about a few months after I ended up in Portland, I thought, oh my God, this is so amazing. If I ever am in crisis, I know this is where I will come to. Mm. And I have never needed to go in terms of crisis, but I go there for rejuvenation. And so we live, as I said, the outskirts of Portland, and between where we live and downtown, there is a, it's called Council Crest. So it's actually a hilly area, and I feel the density, the more toxic density of Portland is kept away because of that mountain ridge.
Oh, sure.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah. And my wife and I, we were able to transform our home and make it into some kind of a sanctuary. So my clients actually love to come in our home, you know, the moment they enter. And so there's the paintings of my teacher are here, and the room in which I'm sitting, you know, goes up into the sky. So it has a very peaceful resonance for people that come in. So I got very lucky that way. Very, very lucky.
The way you were describing how you guys live on kind of the outskirts of the city kind of made me think of like, oh, well, they're the bridge between the city energies and the chaotic energies of the wild.
Absolutely. That's
what I kept hearing was you guys are the bridge between the two realms. And I'm like, that's kind of cool.
Yes, that is cool. That is cool. Because, of course, you know, essentially that's what a shaman does, right?
Right.
Is bridging,
exactly.
Bridging the worlds.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Exactly. And once in a while, it happens that after a shamanic event in our home, there is a coyote in the street. Once in a while.
I had a really scary coyote experience. I used to work in a greenhouse, and it's huge, huge commercial greenhouse. And I was way out in the back 40, way out by the field, and I was about to walk up front for break. And when I went to walk out the back door, a coyote came trotting down the lane, not even 10 feet from me. And I was just like, oh, crap. Oh, crap. Okay, shut my alarm off. Please don't go off. Don't alert him of my presence. And he just paid me no mind and cut a right through the field, and off he went. But I could have reached out and touched him. It was so intense.
What a blessing, Caitlin. I mean, yeah. What a blessing, really. Wow.
Yeah, that was, I was actively denying my trickster energy. Like, trickster was constantly knocking on the door for me, and I was like, no, I don't want it. I don't want it. I don't want it. And the coyote shows up, and I'm like, okay, I guess we'll try this, see what happens. Please
amazing,
don't hurt me.
Amazing.
Sarah, did you have a question that you wanted to ask? I thought
I wanted to just reflect on how not only amazing the story of your shaman elder was, but your own story is really striking to me in a lot of ways. You know, the travel between all these different places that has finally led you here. The story of my own family is, it's got some resonance there. I have a family that departed from Rotterdam.
Oh, really?
In the 1910s, 1911s, when they were afraid that Germany was going to invade.
Yes.
And I've got a group of family that came overseas. At that point, they were sponsored over. And so there's this resonance there. Like, oh, okay.
yes, beautiful.
And just the story of going into the womb, into the Earth Mother, the way he did, and something that Jim was talking about, a lot of different pieces are clicking as we're talking. There's this kind of back current that I'm hearing in as we're talking, that there's all this connective tissue between our lived experiences. There's all this connective tissue between who we were, who we're going to be. When you describe the giving over of objects, to me, that is such a beautiful exchange. I can hear it in your voice when you talk about the gift of the sounding bowls and the gift of, I'm going to butcher his name, Josh, you said?
Yeah, Joshka. Yeah.
Joshka.
Yeah, that's right.
So and I'm sitting here and I'm as you're talking, I'm looking at his self-portrait. I found it on a website that he made in 1995, and it was just so striking because what it looks like to me is a mask full of sound.
Beautiful.
I'm going to post it in the chat so people can look at it, but to me it was just like there's this aspect of personalization to it and yet depersonalization as he's entering the work. And I can feel this coming off of you in your own story of the ancestors of your lineage speaking up through you as a sounding mask.
Mm, that's beautiful, Sarenth. That's beautiful. And also when you speak about connective tissue, you know, because it is so obvious that, and also what's going on right now, for instance, you know, for the shaman, everything has profound meaning and nothing is by accident, you know. And it's true, when I first met Joschka, that when I approached him and said, well, can I contact you? He would say, he looked deep, almost in my soul, you know, and he said, you have to come see me, you know. But it was said as an invitation, but also as a kind of a sacred order, you know, you as if it was already ordained somewhere. And as I said in the beginning of our conversation, when I came to the U.S. that first time, there was that deep recognition. And of course, not really knowing what the rest of my life was going to be, you know, but something was stirred so deeply. And then the first time that I lived in Oregon, I still remember my wife and I, we were on the bus going from Central Oregon to Portland. And all of a sudden on the bus, these chants came through me. And I was not chanting loudly, you know, I didn't want to do that, of course. But unbeknownst to me, we were going through a native to the place where native tribes had lived. So the songs of the land were coming somehow through my body, into my mouth, into my voice, you know? Wow. And that's such a connective tissue thing. And so... obviously, right now, it's so that there is something out of harmony between humans and Mother Earth, right? And I think that's why many people, it's almost as if the archetype of the shaman is being awakened in many, 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 many people, you know?
Indeed.
And that nature pulls us to where we need to be. And how that works, we don't know. But it is a higher intelligence that's... and also in my life, yeah, I think it was the being able to follow that thread has been the thing that I'm most grateful for at my age, you know. And I believe it's available to everyone. But of course, we have to be willing to listen. And then if we receive a message, then we have to be willing to put it into action as well, right? And my teacher was a great example of that, you know. He always, he wasn't fully treated as a Belgian citizen. He was always the immigrant, you know. Mm-hmm. He also knew that he was working for the future. He knew that. He was the last initiated one in his lineage. So he honored his ancestors. But he also knew that he was a specimen of universal shamanism. And that was what he was trying to pass on. And so for me, it was also, when Caitlin was saying about the bridge, you know, for me, it has been great to be a European within the native traditions here. You know, I found some wonderful colleagues here. But we all are kind of making this patchwork, you know, of connecting all the lineages, because somewhere it goes back in time, you know. I don't know if you've seen in my book, but one of the things that moves me very deeply is those caves, those ancient caves, like in France, you know, the Chauvet cave. Yep. These paintings from 36,000 years ago with this deep, deep reverence for the animals and the artistry, the ones who painted that. It doesn't come out of nowhere. It comes out from somewhere, you know? So yeah, sacred shamanism has a lot to offer these days. So I'm very hopeful in a way that the crisis that we are going through is some kind of a game changer. You know, it's going to wake up more and more people. And of course, you know, also on the practical level of the health care system and all of that. Hopefully, right? Hopefully.
Have you noticed, like we have, Frank, we've talked about it a couple times, and I agree with you completely. I think we all do, that the shamanic archetype is waking up. I see more and more people called to this path or a variation of this path. We're always really careful to say that everyone has to be a shaman. Being a shamanic practitioner is fine. Being someone that's just open to the spirits is fine. But we're seeing a lot more people that are being open. And I was talking about this with my family just at dinner before the interview here. And it's amazing that when humans have been forced by all this to settle down and to be quiet, the pollution levels have gone down. The canals in Venice are now clear enough where fish are coming in. You know, and I'm hoping that this is a glimpse that makes us want that kind of quiet connection more, and that we as a species dive into it and take that opportunity.
Absolutely, Jim. Absolutely. And I enjoyed the poem that you read in the beginning, you know.
Thank you.
Yeah, we are forced right now to go inside, right, and to isolate, but not disconnect from each other. On the contrary, you know, to connect on a deeper level, and we are in all this together. And my grandparents, of course, they were in both of the world wars, you know, mm-hmm. and at the dinner table when I was a kid, there was always talking about that, and so I hope that this really, so this time we can see this as fighting an enemy, but we can also see that the virus is coming to teach us something, and that mm-hmm. we have to live in harmony. And I don't think, I mean, everybody knows it's unprecedented, right? That all the scientists all over the world are working like crazy in a good way, you know, to try to help, you know, and, I think prayers are needed, and also that silence. It's time for the world to come to a stop for a moment, right? And rethink, re-envision, and also be humble. You know, have deep respect for where the answers need to come from. Mm-hmm. They have to come from a different place.
Yeah, I agree. I can't add anything to that. That just sums it up so perfectly. I don't think I can add anything to that. But I just really hope, I pray.
Yes.
One of my main prayers anymore is that people find the joy and the reconnection in life.
Yes.
I think you started the conversation always saying that we're so out of balance in a lot of ways. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. I just really hope that we, the people who are feeling this call, yes, and have done this work, can help a shepherd, maybe is the best word. I can't mm-hmm. think of one better, but you know, just kind of give the right nudges here and there, and hopefully we can come to a better place as a world. So I don't know.
Yes. And shepherd is a wonderful, wonderful word, you know, it really is. And also that the young and the elders here are in this peculiar position, right, vis-a-vis each other. And the young people have been waiting for the elders to take up their place. And, of course, we haven't seen great examples of that lately at all, on the contrary, right? Mm-hmm. And the new generations, I have a lot of hope in them. I see them in my classes. They are the 20-year-olds that I have in my classes are much more open than I was at 20. You know, I mean, that's so obvious. They are sensitive. They care for the earth. They want to make a difference. They're not blind to what's going on, far from it, but they want to live on this planet in a different way, you know? Mm-hmm. Certainly in Europe, the school kids, actually, in the middle school, they have been going on these marches.
Oh, you know? Yeah, it's so inspiring.
It's fantastic. And the grandparents are going with them, you know? It's a big movement. Of course, right now, everything on that level has come to a halt also, but that's not going to go away, you know? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So that would be one silver lining from this whole crisis, that the generations will meet each other, you know? And soon we will be able to hold hands again, we hope, right?
Yeah. I hope so. I really do. That's a great point, though. I think that maybe in some ways that's part of the imbalance is that our elders are not very good elders in the sense that they would have been in more traditional cultures. You get to a certain point and you stop thinking about yourself and you're trying to think about the generations that come after. And maybe here in the West, we don't have such good examples of that right now.
Yes, that's true. You know, so I've had the chance to travel a bit in India, for instance. The family structure is still, in many places, certainly in rural India, you know, it's so beautiful. I mean, people really, they stick together. Mm-hmm. And even the poorest of the poor, you know, they are telling stories from morning till evening. You know, they're making music together. They sing the mantras. I was in Bhutan a couple of years ago, which was a great experience. And also the shamans there, they are incredible. You know, it's a strong shamanic culture. They're right up there, you know. Mm-hmm. So often in the temples, because they have many, many temples in Bhutan, you have a picture of the king. It's still a kingdom, but it has a parliament. So it has the king and his wife, and they have a baby. So there's always pictures of them. There's a picture of Buddha. There's a picture of Padmasambhava, who was an incredible shaman. I love that guy from the Middle Ages, you know. Mm-hmm. And so those little cultures, that there's less than a million people living there, you know, but it's a forward-looking culture in terms of the ecology. Mm-hmm. So I do think, and it's a culture where the elders also are venerated, or at least have an important place. And of course, right now, this virus seems to be... the worst for the elders, and hopefully there is enough compassion, you know, mm-hmm. to not only listen to the wisdom of the elders, but also in terms of caretaking. Mm-hmm. Because it's sad, you know, that at the end of their life in the US, a lot of the elders are forgotten. I mean, that is so sad. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I think, and I know we've discussed this on the show quite a few times, one of the major problems that we see as practitioners going on with people nowadays is the disconnect from nature. Mm-hmm. But I think what this current pandemic is starting to show us is the major disconnect that we have with each other. Yes. As well. And I have heard stories from people who have farms. One in particular right down the road that I volunteer at has had a sign out, you know, fresh eggs for sale, and they've never once sold out until, was it yesterday or the day before? Yep. They finally totally ran out of eggs because the grocery store didn't have any. And so they were very grateful to be able to support their neighbors in that sense of, well, I have something that I can offer you. Like, I have too much of this thing, and I'm willing to give it to you, but I'm also willing to draw a boundary and not harm myself in the process of trying to help you. But having that understanding of not only do we need our connection to nature, we also need our connection to each other in order to survive.
Absolutely, Caitlin. Absolutely. You know, and that was also the connective tissue that Sarant was talking about, right? This is the reality of what is, you know, whether we want to or not, but I would say we should want to. We are interconnected, right? Mm. That is so, I think shamans have always known that, you know, the native people have always known that. And certainly in the U.S., for a European, you know, the discrepancy between the rich and the poor is almost revolting. You would think that over time that would be evened out, but the way it has been going in the last decade or so is just, it's just not acceptable. Mm-hmm. And people are happy when they share, right? Mm-hmm. They really are. I have, certainly in Bhutan also, that was so beautiful. The people are so happy. They're very limited. They're limiting the tourists to about 100,000 a year, you know, so that that tourism doesn't change the country.
Oh,
when they see a tourist, they want to share what they have. You know, they're proud of it. And I do hope that these values are able to come back. I remember my parents were often talking about that in the Second World War, there was two aspects. There were people that were hoarding and that were selling food, you know, beyond the price. And then there were the ones that were giving away stuff, right? Mm-hmm. So when the war ended, the ones that gave away stuff, they were the happy ones. You know, they had long lasting friendships because of it, you know? Yeah. And if I may digress, I'm thinking for a moment, I think I heard you say, Sarenth, that you work in a maximum security prison. Did I get that right?
I work in a maximum security mental health facility.
Mental health facility, okay. Because twice, you know, in Oregon, I had the opportunity to work shamanically in a medium security prison for women, shamanically. And it was just the most amazing thing for me. I'm thinking about interconnections also, you know. To tell you the truth, I was a little apprehensive. What would I open myself up to, you know, because I'm a bit in a vulnerable space also when I go out.
Right.
It was the opposite. I felt the presence of the helping spirits so strongly. And there was just a few minutes, not many, you know, maybe three or four, that when the session was over, when I had finished with my shamanization, that they could come up to me. What they shared was so beautiful and not different in any way from my regular clients in my home. Not at all. These are people with visions, with feelings, with sensitivity. They had deep gratitude, you know? Mm-hmm. And I hope that is one of the things that will change also in here and everywhere, of course, but is the whole prison culture, you know? The dignity of everybody should be deeply respected. You know, just by the grace of God. I mean, we could be there, right? Sometimes it's just the way life works, right?
Mm-hmm. So it's something that I repeat fairly often to my coworkers, is the only reason that you're not where this person's at is the blessing of different brain chemistry and you haven't had that one bad day.
Yes. Beautiful, Sarenth. Beautiful.
I mean, truthfully, I mean,
yes.
It's really what my purpose is there to do besides my job, obviously, because of the way that I work with our patients, I get, sometimes they'll come up to me and they'll just share things in their life, or they'll share things that they've done that they need to get off their chest. And as horrible as some of these things are, and I'm not going to share any details, but there are some truly gruesome things that some of these patients have done and shared with me. Mm-hmm. And yet there is a blessing in that sharing, because they don't have to carry that on their own. Yes. There are so many of these people who have suffered so much pain and abuse so early in their life that even socializing with some sense of normality was never really an option. They were broken. A lot of these folks entered life very harshly or broken. Mm-hmm. I don't know how else to put it. And there is some distancing I have to do with this job because it keeps me safe. It keeps that, well, more to the point, it also keeps them safe. Mm-hmm. You know, but I consider that not altogether different from your elder distancing himself sometimes from the walls of the cave he was working in. You can't always be in that darkness because it will swallow you. Yeah.
Yeah, that's beautiful, Sarant. I mean, wherever we are, there is a reason that we are there, but certainly working in a place where you are at, I mean, it's very humbling, isn't it? I have in my office also people, not so much maybe different from yours, but still, they will tell me stories that they cannot tell to anybody else for fear of being ridiculed or thinking they're crazy, you know. And as you know, many of my clients are my greatest teachers, you know. Mm. And when I think I have something going on that's weighing on me, and then I hear a story, you know, immediately it just completely evaporates into nothingness, you know, because there is a lot of suffering on this planet. It's obvious, you know, and it shouldn't be like this, right? I mean, there has always been suffering, but some of it comes out of social injustice. Some of it comes because we are not taught how to open the heart, you know. Being compassionate is something that can be learned. I mean, it really can. And again, that's certainly a function of the elder, you know, the elders, to be compassionate and to pass on the wisdom of the experience, you know. When I think about my ancestors, I mean, if not for their efforts, or my parents' efforts, I wouldn't be sitting here talking to you, you know. Mm-hmm. I would not have had the opportunity to study, to travel. So the reverence for the elders and for the ancestors, which is really a common shamanic theme all over the globe, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, is deep respect.
All right, fine. So I'm going to share this because I'm being called to.
Please.
So one of the functions I serve at work is, so I've talked on and off on the show about having a wolf spirit, being wolf spirited. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Part of my job at work, besides keeping the patients and myself and my staff safe, is there have been times where there will be this abundance of energy. It attracts toxic spirits because of the environment. So part of my job is to clean that up, to eat it in a very real sense. And something that partnering with some of the spirits that I have, the rune Nauthys, for instance, comes to mind. As well as the great dragon, Nithog, who chews the root of Yggdrasil and takes the poison of the world and turns it, as I term in the prayer for her, she who chews the root of Yggdrasil and eats the poison and turns that poison from poison to useful shit and from useful shit into good soil, holy soil. There's this ongoing process that shamans engage in, and it's something that you said at the top of the show, where they will be in a place and they'll be the balance. When your elder came to you and said, you know, you will talk with me, and it's a holy order, there's this kind of resonance I felt with that when my own elder came to me. And the unfolding of who we are and what we are and where we are is a constant thing. And where I'm at in my job, you know, yes, we are in the midst of multiple illnesses, not just in terms of mental, but very real physical ones that I'm literally decontaminating every time I come home from work. Mm-hmm. But as a shaman, as a spiritual person in that environment, my job is also to be the cleansing being there, because the work environment can get really toxic spiritually, psychologically. And so there's always this offset. I find a story that Jim told me a very long time ago keeps coming up again and again, where the shaman is asked to come to this village because there's something wrong with the village that can't be addressed by the person who lives there. And so the shaman says, okay. Well, she goes into the lodging that was provided for her, and she disappears for like 2 or 3 weeks. And the people are like, well, what the hell? And she says, don't bother me. I'm still working through something. And when she finally emerges from her lodging, and she addresses the people, and things have started to resolve. And they were like, well, what did you do? You were just sitting in your hut for 3 weeks. You know, the only time we saw you was when you needed to use the facilities or to eat. Well, that's because I needed to come into balance with myself so you all could come into balance. And so a lot of what you're talking with, between your experiences with people, between your elders' experiences with people, and just reading some of the summaries of his experiences, your experiences that you shared with us tonight, it's this consistent, our point is to engage in balance. I like that you're not using language like we are the force of good. No, not always. Sometimes you have to be that bastard and say, you done fucked up, and here's where you're going to get off of this particular road if you want to make amends and do things right.
Right.
Sometimes being the bastard is precisely what the shaman has to do. So I like that you're talking balance, and you know, in Jim's language, there's heaviness and lightness. In the language of your elder and some of the things that I've heard you speak of already, there's tension and relaxation. So there's a great deal of poison in this world, but there are people who are working to be that cleansing force, who are working to be that balance, that counterbalance to all the poison being spewed. So yes, we are in a trying time, but take heart, because the people that are needing to do the work are doing the work.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely, Sarant. Absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah, and I love that story. I have heard that. It's one of my favorite stories too, you know. And then when we were talking about the shamanic archetype, you know, so everybody is being called right now to help with the balance, right? It cannot be done by one person. It has to be done by millions and millions and millions of people. Right. Mm-hmm. And so when we are in a strong place, then it is good to eat some of that shit and allow it to be transformed. Right. Mm-hmm. When we are in a weak place, then we need to be able to receive. Right.
Yes.
And so often it goes from one day to the next day in a different way. Right. And it's the inner voice that can tell us, you know, what we need and also where we are needed. Right. And to trust that. And I know a few people who work in the prison system. It's quite a challenge. And of course, you have the responsibility to also take care of yourself so that you don't get depleted. When we are depleted, we can not help very well, right? But I think it's also always possible to connect with these entities of light, you know, and the entities of the earth, the strong forces of the earth. So we don't have to ever do it just by ourselves, right? When we open up, there is support. Yeah. And I
had a conversation like that with one of my students because they asked me about a shamanic cleansing, and they're like, the situation the person's dealing with, I don't think I have the ability to cleanse it off myself. And I said, you're not supposed to be cleansing it off yourself. Your job as the shaman is to know what other spirits you can call on. It's to work with your relationships. They're the ones that are going to cleanse this heaviness off. You're the one that is building the relationships so they come.
Yeah, precisely, Jim. Precisely, precisely. Yeah. And that is the celebration of the interconnectedness, right? Mm-hmm. Just like in the jungle, when there is a poison next to it as the medicine. But it's the same in society, right? All the time, right? And to be able to trust that and to see that, mm-hmm. right? Yeah.
Frank, I really feel like I need to ask you something in me is really wanting to ask, because I think there's something that somebody listening needs to hear. The question I'm wanting to ask is about your personal practice. Maybe what you do with clients, maybe not, but I feel like something about your personal practice, how you conduct your day, the prayers that you make, something like that. Tell us a little bit about that, because I feel like there's something in there that somebody needs to hear.
Oh, sure. Yeah, I'd be happy to. So I have a strong meditation practice. I have been, as I said, you know, before, I have been practicing meditation since the age of 21 or 22. So I sit in the morning for about 40 minutes. And for me, that is a great purification time. Mm-hmm. Typically, when I wake up, I feel good, but still, then I go to deeper levels inside. And then after that, I'm really ready for the day. And then during the day, I will also do often two small sessions of self-Reiki, you know, Reiki, mm-hmm. the healing art, and about 20 minutes each. And so when I do that, again, I feel revitalized after that. And sometimes I will also lie on a magnetic mat while I'm doing Reiki. Mm-hmm. And then the clients that come see me, they come either for Reiki or for shamanic or for both. And so from my teacher, and from some other teachers as well, I have learned to use my voice in a very kind of healing way, using the whole register. And so doing the shamanic work actually activates all the glands in my system. Mm-hmm. And also something in the bones gets activated. So typically when I have been shamanizing for a while, I feel more energized than before I started. So it's a way of constantly recycling the energy that given by the end of the day. Sometimes, of course, I am tired, and I will try most of the time when a session is finished, I will energetically cut the cords. So I keep the people in my heart, but I'm not really trying to think about them too much, except if spontaneously they come back into my field. And if that happens, I will do a very short prayer. I will acknowledge them. I will love them. But I will not sit constantly in the energy of something that's past, even if it's an hour ago, right? So it's a practice of being constantly in the moment and see what this moment calls out of me. And so far, that's been a wonderful thing to. Because my life, in a way, is my practice, all of it. But I'm very dedicated to my service to people. It's what gives me the greatest joy, you know, is to feel that this kind of work is effective. I don't always know why it is as effective as it is, but it seems to be. It's almost like being in a lab, you know, and you do the same experiment over and over and say, oh, it has results, you know. Yeah, really.
Not really sure what those results are, but they're results.
They're results. Well, the results are that people, you know, are more peaceful. They have a better outlook. They are happier when they leave than when they came in, you know. Mm-hmm. So I think those are important results. And often I feel certainly the shamanic and the Reiki have a very beneficial effect on the immune system, right? Which has been impacted today. Mm-hmm. For quite a while. And we know more than ever that everybody has an inner healer. And if that inner healer is activated, that is good for the physical body, emotional body, the spiritual body, really for everything, right?
Right.
Yeah. And I think that's the medicine of the future. You know, I think regular medicine will, of course, keep developing, but it will be in conjunction with natural medicine, which is really about harmonizing and giving life to the inner immune system that's always there.
Right? Yeah, I agree. Mm-hmm. I do agree. Actually, yeah, thinking of Reiki, we have a listener that I found out just today is in Singapore, which I was kind of impressed with. But actually, they had a couple questions about Reiki, if you have a moment.
Sure.
One of their questions, which I thought was a really good one, is what advice can you give people on how to discern genuine Reiki practitioners from the fakes? Because Reiki is so popular, it seems like everybody's claiming they do it now.
Yeah, that's correct. And that's the same like in yoga, you know? Yeah, I think to trust the reality of your own intuition, you know? If it's a genuine practitioner, I think almost invariably, even after a few minutes, you know, you feel at ease. You're not second guessing. If it's fake, usually it feels fake on some level. In some level. And if it is, trust that there is somebody else out there for you. And I don't wish any negative experiences on people, of course, you know. But often a negative experience will lead you to the one you're supposed to be with, you know.
Is it possible that when you're saying leads you to the right person, does that mean, do you think sometimes that might just be a connection issue because that practitioner is not the right one for you? It doesn't necessarily mean that they're fake. It's just they're not
exactly
the right one for you.
Well, that too. Yeah. I would say in my experience, the majority of Reiki practitioners certainly are well-intentioned. Mm-hmm. Not everybody has the same training, you know, and there are
definitely
different levels of competence. And you know, you don't really ever become rich from doing Reiki, so that kind of self-selects a bit. And I don't think too much bad can happen, but I do find it's sad when a person, every Reiki treatment should be sacred, mm-hmm. intimate, sacred, and beneficial. You know?
Oh, that's actually an interesting point. I can see where one of the things that might really throw up a flag is when they're treating it just like come in, you're going to sit here for a few minutes. Let's, you know, make sure the cash is on the table and we're going to get this done, as opposed to treating it like a ritual. That's probably a huge flag right there. Cause there is there's an intimate connection there with those.
It's a very intimate connection. Yeah. Yeah. And today, of course, it's even more. Today we hesitate to put hands on each other.
Right. But in general, social distancing.
Hands on a person is a very intimate act, you know? Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Well, actually, that leads into the second part of the question in some ways, because the lack of touch, the second part of the question they had was, what do you think about the online courses that teach Reiki? Are they effective or not?
Well, I have never witnessed them, but I've known people who've taken Reiki online. Mm-hmm. And sooner or later, you know, they come to a Reiki practitioner is actually present with you, you know.
Right.
So I think there is a place for that. In my own life, though, whenever I had the chance to go to somebody who was close to the source, wherever that person was, if I had the ability, I would seek out that person, you know. Mm-hmm. Once my wife and I, we had, unbeknownst to us, my wife was receiving a session from at that time, the great kahuna in Hawaii, Papa Aue. And, you know, he was already in his late 80s, you know, a very simple man. But he went to the Mayo Clinic when they needed an expert there, right? So when you meet a genuine practitioner in life presence, it does something. But of course, here, this conversation we are having right now online, I mean, really, I feel like I'm speaking to friends, you know.
Right. I agree.
Yeah. So that's also amazing that this is possible today, right? So with Reiki, the hand positions obviously can be demonstrated online. The initiation, I think it's possible. It's possible. I love to do them in presence, you know. The attunements or the initiations, I There's nothing I like to do more. Same with shamanic initiations, you know. I will always, always remember the initiation I received from my teacher, you know. It kind of registered in my... I think the times are changing. Mm-hmm. But still, there is something about the oral tradition and the tradition of being heart to heart in one's other's presence. I mean, I hope one day we meet in person. That may never happen, but it could.
Fantastic. I would like that.
Yeah, I would
like that as well. Much.
Sure, sure. But I wouldn't rule it out that, and today we have to do it. I mean, in these next couple of weeks or months, we don't know. We have to do it like this, right?
Mm-hmm. That's a fair point. I mean, this as somebody who has engaged in rituals online, both mm-hmm. in terms of Skype and in terms of through a chat avatar program like Second Life, you know, it feels different, but when you're working with energy in that space, it's sometimes a lot easier if you can put yourself into your avatar's headspace.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because it's kind of like, for anybody who's done bilocation or has done journey work or anything like that, really it's you're working with the electronic medium as a vehicle. And it's not a lot different in terms of my experiences from taking on a form you're not really used to and going somewhere to journey work or going somewhere to journey.
Yes, I completely agree with you. And for me, there has been a bit of a learning curve there. For the longest time, I was holding meditations in my home and people would come. And then at some point, I was invited to do an online meditation. And so in the beginning, you know, it was because I had to kind of stop my pre-meditation to get with the technical stuff, and something the technical stuff would go wrong, you know. So I had to go back in my regular personality of Frank, who is worried about making a mistake or pushing the wrong button. Yeah,
yep.
You know.
Yep.
Yeah. But that became easier. And I could feel, today I can feel actually when people are, wherever they are, they come online, it's like the field is expanding a bit. And then later at the end, you know, sometimes it's nice to wave at each other. But one advantage I feel with shamanic work is that when it's done from a distance, I'm not at all connected so much with the personality of the person, you know, who comes in and they're a little bit nervous or they don't know what to expect or they mm-hmm. want to leave or whatever, you know. It's really from basic core energy to basic core energy. So I can focus sometimes a little bit better from a distance. That being said, my preference is still in person, you know?
Yeah, but, likewise.
Yeah.
Because I do rune readings online, and there's a real energetic difference between doing it over Zoom or Skype and doing it in person. And like you, my preference is in person, but for some folks, that's just especially right now with all the travel lockdowns and everything else, that's simply not an option. And so in a way, it's kind of requires us as spiritual practitioners to be more flexible, not only in our thinking, but in terms of, well, this is a new tool in your toolkit. You're going to have to figure out how to work with it.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And maybe Sarenth, just maybe this is preparing us for interplanetary connection, right? That's not such a weird idea.
No, it's you. So once upon a time, it would have been really science fiction, but not so much anymore.
Exactly. Yeah.
I mean, especially.
Go ahead. Oh, go ahead. Sorry. I'm sorry, Sarenth. No, go.
Well, I mean, we're talking about, we're talking about expeditions getting underway to Mars pretty quick here in the next 10 years. They're wanting to do manned missions and everything else. So, I mean, you're talking about, you know, maybe in the future, some person working on the Mars space station or something is going to want a rune reading, and I'm going to have to go, okay, We got to draw that energetic circle a little bit bigger now.
I'm waiting. I want the long-standing question that I have answered. I want to know, if you do a grounding and centering on Mars, do you get more aggressive? This is what I want to know. I want to know this. Curiosity. Frank, tell us a little bit about the Living Light Center and also about your book. I want to make sure we talk about both of those.
Oh, okay. So my latest book has been a long time in the waiting. So it's a bit of a spiritual memoir, you know, different steps here and there. But mostly I select those events that could be interesting for the reader, you know. And then it's also a tribute to I have had many, many teachers in my life. And some of them, of course, we talked to Joschka, of course, was a big one, right? A big one. But I also spent 2 years in the community of Osho that some of you may know. And that was a very instrumental period of shifting for me. Then I've had, I don't know if you've ever heard of Chogyam Trungpa. He was a great Tibetan lama who started in Naropa, what's now the Naropa University. And in the presence of these great beings, I have always felt an activation of my own shamanic field. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting that sometimes I'll be in some kind of alternate developed, like a consciousness opening, and something from way back that happened as a transmission from one of those teachers is being reactivated, or the full meaning of it all of a sudden is clear to me, you know? And so in the book, I try to present the teachings of these, the ones that I have selected. Mother Mira is another one. Don't know if you know Mother Mira, but I have sat with her multiple times. And I could not be today without having been exposed to those teachers. And so it was fun for me to write each chapter and to see which stories would come, because I tried to interweave a bit of storytelling to make it interesting for the reader and not too dry or too intellectual also. And then to give some of the things that I have learned from them in a nutshell. And then woven throughout the book are meditations that I have been receiving for a long time. That's a whole story how I got into that. Once there was a medium in London that brought through a guide who suggested to me that I should bring through teachings of a higher being. And I had no idea how to go about that. But then I disciplined myself to do that. And then one day in Mount Shasta, you know, they started coming, and they have been coming ever since. So there's a selection of all those in the book. And then I put the paintings of my teacher, quite a few, 33 paintings of Joschka are in there. And my friend Lloyd, who I think was on the chat today.
Yeah, yeah.
I saw his name. So he's a photographer, and he was able, because these are multidimensional paintings, but he did a great job to try to get the essence of them in there. So yes, it's been fun. So first I wrote a Dutch version, and then I expanded it for the English-speaking market, and it's called Unity in Everything That Is, and is, of course, available at Amazon and my own website. And then in my center, you know, my wife is a mental health therapist and also a Reiki master. And so we often collaborate. And when we are home, because twice a year we go to Europe to teach, we've been doing this for many, many years. I'm very proud that we have one shamanic group that's been going on there for 12 years.
Wow.
Yes. Yeah. We started way back and meeting 3 times a year. And now we still meet twice a year. And also that's we have new groups of students coming in. And I must say, we have learned so much from offering these trainings. And truly, we talked a bit. It's true, you know, not everybody needs to call themselves a shaman, of course, you know. But there are so many people who are shamanically gifted these days. It's like this whole field has been opened up in a big, big way. And it's beautiful, you know. We were not trained. Most of us were not trained traditionally, not when we were young, certainly not, you know. But at some point, something happens today in many people's, whoever is interested in this usually has, certainly has affinity, but also has some talents for it, you know? And I love to be like a midwife, you know, to help people a bit. Because I remember when I started, you know, I'm so happy that my teacher didn't tell me what was going to happen to me. Because I think I would have run.
Yes, that sounds about right. Yep.
Yeah. Doesn't it?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. So,
For anybody that's listening to this show, the website to go to is livinglightcenter.com. And if you're resonating with a lot of what Frank is saying, I will point out that the book's available on that website under the books tab. But the part that it really excited, a lot of us are going to be home with some extra time. Frank narrates the audio book version himself, and it's available on that website too. So make sure you go check that out.
One thing I wanted to comment on, Frank, was the fact that you've had multiple teachers in your life, and you have, obviously, you have a very eclectic kind of all across the board path. Like you don't follow one singular path. How have you in your life managed to make it all very harmonious and flow together? I mean, are the boundaries we put in place on those paths our own mental boundaries that we were raised with, because they're all one type of religion and not actually separate, and we just perceive them as separate? Or did you kind of figure out where they were similar and kind of sew them together there and then let it grow to be what it is?
Yeah, it's a little bit of both, really. I think I have always been, by nature, fairly eclectic. I've always been a voracious reader, you know. And I don't know if you know about the Enneagram, but I'm a number 9. So I would always, whatever a person would be saying, I would like totally get it, you know. But then somebody else would say something else, and I would also get it. But yes, I was starting to see that the basic truth of any spiritual path or religious path was very, very similar. And I couldn't understand really why people would make such a big deal in trying not to understand each other, you know?
Right.
Yeah. And sometimes that was held against me. Sometimes, you know, like if I was with Osho, they would say, well, you're with Osho, why are you still visiting your shamanic teacher? And for me, it was so obvious that they were both extremely valid. And why why not, you know?
Right, right.
So for me, and once in a while, it's true. Like I remember I had an opportunity once to either go to Osho or to Trungpa. And I was kind of debating about that for maybe a month or so. Mm-hmm. I must have been around 30. And then it so happened that I ended up in a community in Boulder, Colorado, with Trump, and then Trumpa was there. The community was an Osho community. And so I was doing both meditations at the same day. I was doing Trumpa meditations and Osho meditations. And it all helped me, you know, it really did. So I think, of course, you know, for some people that would be confusing, I'm certain. For me, it's been extremely rich, you know. And I love the fact that there are so many ways. I know that, you know. And of course, everyone has to find which path works for them. That's part of life, you know. Mm-hmm. But sometimes it's an eclectic path. And for some people, it's a steady Zen path, you know. It has to suit our nature, you know. Mm-hmm. But today, I have the feeling it's a time of synthesis. And of course, all the big spiritualities are available, also online, right? It's an amazing time. Mm-hmm. We can see documents of so many teachers.
Oh, I know it.
Recent teachers and current. I mean, it's when I was young, we had to go to the library and borrow some books. It was hard to find. I was very lucky to find my teacher as early as I did, you know? Mm-hmm. But today, if you have a little bit of a nose and you follow the scent of your nose, you're going to find, at least for now, a very good authentic teacher.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that we are in a very fortunate time.
We really are. There's so many different paths emerging in so many different areas of the world. You no longer have to climb to the very top of that very far away etheric mountain to find the shaman on the top of the hill anymore. You have to be willing to be open and observant of your surroundings. And well, in like my case, have somebody say, well, you chose an eagle feather out of my case, and now it's your job to find a teacher, but you can't ask anybody to be your teacher. I was like, wait, how am I supposed to find a teacher if I can't ask them to be my teacher? And he goes, you'll figure it out. So yes. I stressed over this for weeks.
Yes.
I'm like, how do I ask somebody to be my teacher without actually asking them? And finally, I just gave it up to the universe and to my ancestors and said, okay, I don't know what to do with this. Here you go. Find me a teacher. And I don't know, I think a week later, Jim looked at me and he goes, hey, do you want to be my student?
Ah, great. Yes, that's how it works, isn't it?
It really is.
Yes. Yes, it's beautiful. I think, you know, on that level, I have a feeling it's already contracted for, mm-hmm. but you still have to recognize it, you know?
And sometimes you have to surrender to it. Like, yes. we live in such a grasping community and country, you know, we're very, like, this pandemic has proved it very much that people are emptying shelves on in the stores and hoarding things and clutching things to them, afraid to let go and afraid to lose things. And that was a very powerful lesson for me in my life, that you have to sometimes let things go in order to receive them. And so there was an analogy given to me by my first teacher, who is a very, very good yogi, in the teaching of aparigraha, or non-grasping. Mm-hmm. And she goes, you cannot drink from a river with a closed fist.
Mm.
She goes, you can only drink from a river if you cup your hands and collect the water.
Beautiful.
And it took me a very long time, I'll be honest, to understand that teaching. And it wasn't until I was told to, hey, find a teacher without asking, did I finally understand that teaching. And I was like, oh, so I have to let things go in order to get them?
I keep grabbing the water and punching myself in the face. I don't know what's going on.
I have a bloody nose and I'm mad about it.
And of course, Caitlin, you may have heard, when the teacher is ready, the student appears, but also vice versa is true too, right?
Right, right. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Frank, I think we're... Sarah, did you have something that you wanted to add?
Nope, just okay. not in long and agreeing.
All right. Frank, I think that we're probably at a pretty good point. I really want to thank you so much for joining mm-hmm. us tonight. This has been like such an enjoyable conversation. I have had such a good time. And I like you, I feel like we're now instant friends, and I really appreciate mm-hmm. that.
Same here. Same here. This has been lovely. Absolutely lovely.
Thank you very much.
I really enjoyed this conversation. You're fun.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I know.
Fun and deep. Yeah.
It's a good time.
The real thing.
Mm-hmm. Welcome to come back anytime.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
And thank you, everybody who's listening to us tonight. Thank you for everybody that joined us in the chat room. Thank you for all our wonderful patrons. I do need to mention we've got a new patron on Patreon. Thank you, Amy, for joining us and taking us over the $100 a month mark. So that's an amazing thing for us. And we have so much gratitude for all of you listeners mm-hmm. and for all the things that you bring into our lives. I think it's wonderful. We wanted to open up the conversation tonight because we care about all you guys. We have such a connection with you, and our connection that we have on our various chat groups and the Discord and that, you ask us questions that really enrich our lives. And so we are glad to have the opportunity to speak back to you guys and hopefully enrich yours as well. And so we really appreciate that reciprocity. So thank you once again, Frank, for joining us. Thank you, everybody that's listening. And we'll talk to you next time around the fire. What would